I'd like to welcome everyone to the meeting this evening, and hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item either in the chamber or via Teams, you use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. I would remind members to keep their instant messaging to the following letters: Q if you wish to ask a question, and C for a comment, P if you wish to propose, and S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using the instant messaging. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via chat facility so that we are aware this is an active decision and does not indicate connectivity problems. Okay, so we move on to tonight's agenda. So item one is apologies. Okay. So we have Councillor Mathers and McAteer and Marie Ward. Item number two, any declarations of interest?
Chair, item 11, as chair of DBEC, I'll not be taking part in that item. Because it's for contract funding, so I think step back as chair.
Sorry, what item is that under, Councillor Byrne?
Item 11 DBEC. Okay, yeah, it's contract for funding, so as chair, I won't be taking part in that one.
No problem, thank you, Councillor Byrne. Item number three, action sheet arising from Strategy, Policy and Resources Committee meeting held on the 12th of October 2023. Well, we'll just go through pages for accuracy. So page 1, page 2, page 3 and page 4. The proposer and seconder for that, please. As a proposal from Councillor Quinn, and I'll take Councillor Sharvin as seconder. And Councillor Kelly, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Not to bang on the Moore and Gondola drum, I'm not trying to do that. I just want to say that it does mention the project board, and I'm just aware the minutes of that meeting from the last two meetings haven't been circulated, and it just, as you know, point of governance and transparency, if that be circulated fairly promptly, would be appreciated. Thank you.
No problem. That's noticed. Thank you, Councillor Kelly. Okay, we'll move on to item number four, notice of motion about the annual financial assistance call for provision of life-saving equipment. I'll hand over to Paul.
Thank you, Chair. Members might be aware that Councillor Sharvin brought a notice of motion in relation to a proposal for a financial assistance call. I suppose we've gone and looked at the background of this and I suppose identified that life-saving equipment can be considered under the current financial assistance calls for community and sports capital that happen on an annual basis. A number of courses are currently delivered through SANTA and also community delivering them free of charge. So there is, I suppose, provision out there, if you like. And then also there's statutory and voluntary partners that also provide this type of support as well across across the, I suppose, the UK, if you like, with the Heart Foundation currently having an open call at the moment, and previously Sport and I back in 2018. And so I suppose we just wanted to reinforce that for elected members that, you know, there are opportunities in the current proposals. However, we do note that the previous notice of motion to something similar was brought forward, and there was actually a ring fence theme for DFIDS, and that was actually oversubscribed at the time. So I'm happy to take any questions in relation to this. Cheers, so happy to take any questions, and maybe Councillor Sharvin wants to comment, maybe.
Yes, no problem. Thank you, Paul. Councillor Sharvin?
Yeah, Chair, sure, thank you. And I suppose at the time when raised the motion, most people in the chamber would have been aware of the circumstances that certainly happened in Dundrum, but actually I was informed that similarly a defibrillator with an hourglass also needed to be used on a resident, an elderly resident locally. Chair, the main reason why I brought this was feedback from groups is the cost of replacing the pads. Every time a defibrillator pad is used, it needs to be replaced. And that's a cost that many clubs and community groups need to go and find. And I take Paul's point, given the current financial assistance calls, but whenever you're applying for a grant, be it for the sports or the community capital or any of the capital grants, you're very focused on the wording of that. You know, if you're a sports club, you're thinking balls, goalposts, you know, your day and daily things that you need. And then from a community perspective, if you're looking at capital item, it could be a cooker, it could be refurb in the kitchen. And the real aim of this, of a specific theme for life-saving equipment, is so when an applicant is applying, they are focused. They know what it's for, what they're eligible to get, and they're not thinking of all the other things that they would need as a club or a group. And I have obviously spoken to the officer in relation to the motion, and I am aware the British Heart Foundation have it, but already speaking to them, they're overwhelmed with applications. And Paul touched on it as well when Councillor Taylor brought it a couple of years ago. Like, we were asking Owen Devlin at the time to go and find an additional 30,000 because we were oversubscribed as a council when we made that call, which clearly shows that there is a demand for this particular thing. So, Chair, with that, I would like to propose that we do establish the life-saving equipment grant thing. I am going to suggest a budget, which obviously is up for debate, but I think at least a budget of 15,000, 10,000 being particularly focused on defibrillators. You know, that could fund 10 new defibrillators throughout our district, which I think would be fantastic. And then the other 5,000 would be for the likes of the pad replacements, which could provide for over 30 packets for defibrillators in our district. And yes, there is other responsibilities and other statutory agencies, but we as a council also have a responsibility to help save a life. You know, and it could be the ultimate difference a defibrillator could save someone's life. And from speaking to Paul, and I do take the officer's views on board, some may think differently sometimes, but he certainly feels that a call every 2 years would be acceptable, so it's not going to be annually, and I accept his recommendation that maybe every 2 years the call would come out. So I'll rephrase my proposal. So it's established the life-saving equipment grant thing with a budget of 15,000 split into the 10,000 for defibrillators, 5,000 for pad replacements or any associated parts for a defibrillator, and then that would be every 2 years the call would be going out. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, do you want to put in the chat?
Okay, thank you. Do you have it on for the chat?
Oh,
is that okay?
Okay.
You got it? Just about the paper. Okay, and I see Councillor Taylor in to second your proposal and to make a comment.
Yep, thanks, Chair. Yep, very happy to second Councillor Sharvin's proposal that he's made. as the report states, I initially brought a proposal forward just over 2 years ago now, to look at ways in which we could improve this obviously vital equipment provision in different sporting and community environments across the district. There's obviously a clear need and a clear demand for it, and you know, I think we have an obligation to do that. As you know, one of the key aspects of our strategy as a council is looking after the health and wellbeing of our people, so that this ties in very well with that. So it's something we should be doing. I suppose even, you know, in terms of what Paul has outlined about the previous funds that are there, maybe sometimes in terms of how we communicate things, you know, about them type of funds, it's looking at that as well to see, because, you know, Councillor Sharvin outlined it well. Whenever people looked at that particular fund, they never would have thought of that type of provision. They looked at the other items that he mentioned. So again, whenever this funding is available, it's how we outline and communicate it across the district to make sure that people, you know, obviously explore and avail of that opportunity to get funding for this important equipment. So yeah, very happy to second his proposal that he's made, Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. I think we're all in agreement. Everybody seems happy. Okay. No bother. Thank you. Oh, sorry, Paul.
Right, Leanne. Can I just ask maybe that's the proposal was considered as part of the 2024-25 rates estimates process, just to add to that, and we can, you know, work through that process. That's obviously recommended that it's as part of a financial assistance call for 24-25. There's no budget provision in this year, and that we consider it as part of the rates estimates process. Just wondering if that could be added to the motion.
Councillor Sharvin's given me a nod here, so he's going to come in. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chair. Apologies, Paul. I did forget to include that. Obviously, we need to go through the race process, given that there is no budget. But as long as once we've done the race process and the money is agreed, that it would be the next available call then in the next financial year.
It'll probably be for call three next year, which is around August, so subject to that approval. But yeah, I think we can certainly do that, Councillor Sharvin.
Okay, thank you. All right, okay, so we'll move on to item number five. It's the Irish Language Strategy 24-27. And it's Colin.
Yep.
Hi, Colin.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, that's no problem. We circulated again the Irish language strategy for 24 to 27. As you would be aware, members, we did table this at the 12th of October SPNR meeting, and the decision was to defer it until we'd had a meeting of the Irish language strategy working group. Just to advise, the Irish language strategy working group did meet on the 7th of November, did further review it and take on board additional feedback. We've retabled the Irish language strategy with yourselves. I'm not going to go through it. We've retabled the same documentation again in relation to the consultation document, the updated and amended Irish language strategy, which does set out two strategic objectives to develop the Irish language within the council and also the area, and also capacity building within the Irish language community, and does provide positive actions, measures and outcomes, builds upon the previous bilingualism policy. So it's placed before yourselves to consider and approve the Irish Language Strategy 24-27.
Okay, thank you, Colin. I see I have a proposer in Councillor Hanlon and a seconder in Councillor Howell, but Councillor Riley, you have a comment and a question.
Madam Chair. Yeah, we have concerns about the whole language that the strategy is couched in. Can be very uncomfortable reading. And if you go back to the most recent census 18 months ago now, 6.8% of the people in Urien Mourne had a knowledge of Ulster Scots, 18.2% knowledge of Irish. And, you know, thus a third of the, over a third, 33% over you know, in terms of equality between Ulster Scots and the Irish language. And, you know, even the way the document starts off by saying that, you know, there's a dynamic and growing Irish language community within Urien Mourne and Down. Whenever the census was done, there are apparently 220,000 people in Northern Ireland with a knowledge of Irish. And I'm not trying to put the Irish language down here. I'm just trying to give you our perspective. Out of the 220,000 who claimed to have a knowledge of Irish, 90 from Urien Mourne and Down used the Irish language form to do their census return. And I think that's probably a pretty accurate reflection of the number of people who can actually speak Irish in our district. And some of the comments that you see through it are actually very condescending about the unionist community. And also, if you look at the comments as part of the consultation, it's the high degree of expectation on the part of those people who did participate in the consultation. It's going to make it difficult to maintain equality within the council if people who don't have a fluent use of Irish are going to be disadvantaged. And I mean that both Protestant and Catholic, because the vast majority of ordinary Catholics don't speak or aren't fluent in the Irish language. So it could create this sort of elite within the council. And also in the equality impact assessment, it's saying that it's a general proposal with no clearly defined impact upon or connection to specific equality or good relation outcomes. And, you know, we're concerned that there are equality and good relations outcomes for all the council staff and members of the public who don't have a fluent use in Irish. I have a knowledge of Irish. I was in the Royal Irish Rangers and Regiment, and there's Irish language all throughout the regiment. And so I have no fear of Irish. I have an understanding of basics in it, but I couldn't answer the phone to a fluent Gaelic speaker and say, you know, and give out details of council functions. And if you look through the strategy, that's what a lot of the people expect to be delivered. And that's going to be very, very difficult without discriminating against with people who don't have a full use of Irish. And then, Chairman, or Madam Chair, there's the issue of equality and party of esteem with other cultures in the district. And this brings us back to the Ullans, or Ulster Scots. Ullans is the proper terminology for it. And this is a language that's spoken throughout the district. And everybody speaks it in their everyday language. Those words that came, you know, Scotland got its name from the Scotti, who were the ancient tribe of Ulster that were pushed out of Ulster into Scotland, and then they come back again. And, you know, and brought a lot of their traditions and language back again in later centuries. But if you look at the cost headings for the Irish language and the money that's spent in bursaries and whatever, you know, if there's a third of our population or 6.8% of the population have a knowledge of Ullans and 18.2% have a knowledge of Irish, surely there should be at least a third of the resources made available to the Ullans community. And Ullans is the proper name for Ulster Scots language. So, Chairman, those are the things that are very concerning us. And there will be a 12 weeks further consultation under Section 75, or is that completely done now?
We've already undertaken the...
Sorry,
do
you want to turn off your mic? Councillor Riley just left comment.
This is actually the further consultation. The original draft strategy was brought actually last December to the SPNR committee. It has then went to a further consultation. But we were consulting as well at the same time on our new Equality Action Plan or Disability Action Plan. We did the three plans all together and strategies all together. This is then the result. We've actually tabled the analysis of the consultation, pages 69 and 70. We had outlined what consultees had said. We've then placed our own officer responses here to what these recommendations would be and actions we made and how we updated the actual strategy itself. So this is the finalisation of the strategy and ratification and moving forward. But just to say to councillors, this is the third iteration of our Irish language strategy within council. So it doesn't very much, it doesn't go beyond what we've really traditionally been doing. The language maybe has changed in some respect with regards to the active offer, that approach as well. Yes, we have our, the demand clearly is there. When we, obviously we meet as an Irish Language Strategy Working Group with councillors, the demand for the bursary scheme is fair. You know, it's every year it's almost expanded the amount of applications, and we have an Irish Language Financial Assistance Scheme. I'm not sure, there's a lot of things maybe the council has raised there. There's no actions within the strategy which would be deemed to be discriminatory. They'd be deemed to be positive actions. And many of the pieces of work here, we're not looking to do things monolingually in terms of Irish and trying to exclude, we're actually trying to do things in a bilingual fashion. So it's both languages are working together, be it within our signage, be it within the production of maybe documents, be it moving forward potentially for our website, even though you can currently change our website into any language you may wish. However, I'd like to say it can't be put into Ullins or Ulster Scots. That's one of the languages it isn't available in. That's maybe something to look at. But again, this is about the Irish Language Strategy, not necessarily about Ulster Scots. And maybe that's a discussion which could be had maybe there called the Good Reasons Reference Group.
Thanks, Colin, for that. But I think in our final analysis, we have to be very concerned about the equality issue and the party of esteem issue. And I don't think we can support our vote for this as it stands without some assurance that we're going to get part of esteem for Ullins and the Ulster Scots tradition. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Hanlon, you have a comment?
Thanks, Chair. Well, champagne welcome of policy development. We do acknowledge that as a council area, we're perhaps the most progressive council in the North when it comes to Irish language. And we don't simply want to stand still, and we want to maintain that positive trajectory. I would note that there have been, while it is progressive, there is still some concerns that it remains quite aspirational. But, you know, obviously we keep on moving forward because it is a moving document. We would welcome the continued efforts by Council to enable and support the development of the language. And we would now like to see efforts in relation to future promotion and, you know, keep on moving forward with that. There are examples of best practice which can be drawn from the South, as well as other international examples, such as Wales, for example. Irish language groups have been in contact, and they are slightly concerned in relation to the lack of accountability mechanism in relation to the implementation of the language. So one suggestion could be that as a council, we provide monitoring reports from the cross-party working group, which could be made publicly online. And on that note, I would welcome that if, for example, Councillor O'Reilly has spoken very passionately about this item, we would welcome that you come on to the group and give your views on the group. You're very, very welcome to do so. I do think there are two unionist places on that group. The other point on monitoring review in the strategy going forward is I think we need to embed a greater collaboration with the Irish language community if possible. So just looking really, you know, we've touched on things like the website, we've touched on, you know, what the signage looks like and, you know, how we can be more progressive that way. I would be confident, having sat in the working group, that, you know, officers are working very hard on that in the background, and to make it as inclusive as possible going forward, even in terms of financial assistance as well, that, you know, we make sure that Irish language groups are viewed as community groups as well. So I do want to welcome the paper, and, you know, we want to give our support to the paper. The other thing I just finally wanted to mention was we're reviewing this in 2025. Is that correct?
No, the strategy would be really reviewed on every 6 months in some respects. It's the Councillors of Irish Language Strategy Cross-Party Working Group does receive 6 monthly reports. And it's at that stage, as I've often said to the group and often to the council as well, these are living documents. The policy itself, the bilingualism policy, is due for review in 2025. It's when it's due. But in the meantime, you'll see within the strategy itself, we will be looking at our bilingualism procedures and guidelines for staff and different processes during the period.
Okay, I do appreciate it. It is a living document. And just again, to thank the officers for their time. I know that we had deferred this last month to give it more scrutiny because the Irish Language Working Group had only met once in this term of council. So I do appreciate all the work that's gone in and look forward to continue to work closely with the Irish Language Department going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor Howell, you have... Second, okay. Councillor Sharvin, you have a comment?
Yeah, Chair, thank you. I only joined the Irish Language Working Group this year, and I'll paraphrase the officers from our last meeting. It's been quite a engaging and quite a good working group. Some councillors have particular opinions of why that is, but we'll not go there. But, Chair, I just want to touch on something that Councillor Riley mentioned, you know, about equality and elitism. I don't speak, and I am not fluent Irish. I can certainly pray in Irish, but I don't feel any disadvantage by the Irish language strategy. I actually think it is a good thing that promotes people to want to learn the language, but also to promote those that are fluent and that are passionate about that language. And Chair, our party, SLP, have been fully engaged in promoting Irish language and want to ensure that groups in that community are involved in the strategy. And we've talked at the working group about the mechanisms of how we do engage them fully and how they can actually be involved in the strategy, but also be a champion in promoting the strategy that we as a council want to do. So, Chair, we're very supportive in getting the strategy out and driving it forward.
Thank you, Councillor Sharvin. Councillor Taylor?
Yep, thanks, Chair. Chair, listen, I, a bit like Councillor Riley, I have my own concerns. Whilst we have had strategies in place, I think it is fair to say this is as an expansion on what we have had before, and you know that will lead, despite the fact, you know, it's a fairly extensive document, this with numerous actions outlined in it, and whilst the report says that there isn't any budget in place, and you know they're not expecting, you know, a major requirement in that regard, I'm not so sure that will be the case if the actions that are outlined are fully, you know, fully pressed and fully implemented. There will be cost implications, and we're potentially implementing a strategy where we don't know what that's going to entail. And as a council, when we're actually discussing any issue, it's always, you know, important that we do know the cost implications of it. We've seen that even in the recent item regarding the defibrillators, where we had an anticipated cost and what we outlined. This doesn't even state that. So that's one concern. There is also the issue about the impact, and you know, this has on employees potentially been asked to, you know, implement something that they don't necessarily want to, or even in terms of maybe what requirements it would be for someone seeking employment within the council. I'm not completely convinced that the implementation of that strategy will address the concerns that I have in that regard, despite the fact, you know, that the state, the quality assessment has been undertaken, and they don't see any negative actions as a result of that, but I'm not so sure that is the case. So, you know, on those bases, I, you know, certainly couldn't support it in its current form. So, just wanted to outline that, my position in that regard.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chair. As a member of the Irish-speaking community, many of you will know, of course, that we speak Irish at home in my house, and I speak Irish exclusively to my children. I've been a director of several of the Irish-speaking schools in Castlewellan and in Downpatrick in particular over the years. And it's been something of a struggle to bring up my family speaking Irish with the animus that's presented to us frequently. And I do find it distressing when the Irish language becomes a political football rather than a human rights issue in council. Now, I do know that Her Majesty's government did register Irish as a European national language and recognised it as such, and undertook legally to put in supports at a level three, appropriate to a level three language. I also know that Ullens was registered by Her Majesty's government as a level two language, and different criteria apply to it. And were you to inspect the Ulster Scots Agency's website, you would see that the Ulster Scots Agency is promoting Ullens as it should and as it's required to do as a level two registered language in the areas where it was originally spoken. And it is therefore seeking Ullens to be promoted in Donegal, parts of North Derry, parts of Antrim, and in North Down. The Ulster Scots Agency is not looking to promote the Ulster Scots language here in South Down. We may do it as a matter of community respect, but it's not one of the areas where the Ulster Scots Agency is suggesting that parity needs to be given. Furthermore, the levels of support that that surround a level two a regional accent, as opposed to a level three national language, are very different from a legal point of view, and we're very far behind implementing them in this council. And just to pick up on what Una was saying, we're not the best council in Northern Ireland. Mid-Ulster is much better than us, and so is Derry. And I would say that that when people are making the Irish language a political football in this council, will you remember that it does cause distress to members of this council and to the community who speaks Irish? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Enright. Councillor Brennan.
Tammy Follum, the Gaelic Inish. To translate, that means I'm learning Irish at this moment in time. I'm also learning British Sign Language because I have some deaf employees working for me, and I've dabbled in a bit of Arabic. Reports have shown that learning a language can offset dementia. At 60 years of age, that's why I'm doing it. Sinead, Gurmila Markov.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Riley, you're in for another comment there. Can you make it brief, please?
Yes. Well, it was more just a reply to Councillor Enright. What he said about the Ulster Scots or Ullens only being promoted in certain areas is absolute nonsense term. And where he's getting that from, Kilkeel is one of the heartlands of Ulster Scots, recognised throughout Northern Ireland and Scotland as such. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Sharvin.
I'll be very brief. Yeah, Chair. Sorry, one thing that I did want to touch on, and it was just around the Ulster Scots community and comment about our council. We are obviously speaking about Councillor Lewis's motion on Monday at the Equality and Good Relations, but also this council, in partnership with the Ulster Scots Agency, have an event on next Wednesday where Nelson McLaughlin is coming to speak about the Ulster Scots. So, you know, we are embracing both sides of the argument here tonight, and it shouldn't be an argument. It should be, this is Irish language, and that's what that should be, and then we can discuss Ulster Scots on Monday.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Sharvin. So, Sarah, Councillor Riley has asked for a recorded vote, so no problem.
Councillor
Brennan? Councillor Byrne? Councillor Enright? Councillor Hanlon? Councillor Howell? Councillor Kelly? Councillor Lewis?
Yeah.
Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor McAvoy? Four. Councillor Mathers is absent. Councillor O'Hare?
Four.
Councillor Quinn? Councillor Riley?
Yes, on the grounds of equality.
Councillor Sharvin?
Four.
Somebody has their light on.
Four.
Councillor Taylor?
Against.
So I have 10-4 and 3 against and an abstention.
Sorry. Councillor Riley was green whenever he was out of here.
Well, it was recorded, so I recorded.
No bother.
Yeah. It'll appear in a minute anyway.
No problem. Yeah.
Madam Chair, can we emphasise we're not opposed to the Irish language. People who enjoy it and want to learn it, it's about equality. I want to emphasise that.
Okay, so we're going to move on to item number 6. I'm going to let you continue from there.
Really, this has been just tabled for consideration and approval. It's an updated terms of reference for the Irish Language Strategy Cross-Party Working Group. It's been updated in terms of different job titles and also, which relates probably to planning for the future, and also the changes after the election.
Okay, so I have a proposer in Councillor Enright. And just need a seconder. Councillor Quinn, thank you. Everybody's in agreement with those? Okay, we'll move on to item number 7. It's the statutory report in section 75, policy screening report.
Councillors, it's just for noting. Just to say it's already been sent out to the Quality Consultee list, and the documents are uploaded onto our website for anybody wishing to download them.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Do you propose and second as well for that one, please? I'm happy to propose. Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to item number 8. Sorry, can we just a wee bit of, you know, a bit, it's disruptive whenever these are talking amongst yourselves like that. Sorry. So item number 8, mid-year assessment performance improvement plan 23-24. Gerard, I'll send over to yourself.
Thank you, Chair. So members, the paper in front of you is just a mid-year position on our performance improvement plan for 23-24 up to the 30th of September this year. So all the details are laid out in Appendix 1. I'd just like to stress to members that the information contained within the report may be subject to change when it's verified at year end, and then we have to publish our year-end performance by the 30th of September 2024. So members are asked to consider and agree the mid-year assessment of performance plan 2023-24. I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. Councillor Byrne, you have a question?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. My question is to Gerard around the planning performance again. I suppose we get this at the same point in this performance report every single year, but it's the one thing that's picked up rightly by media because it seems to be decreasing year on year. But I can't get my head around the figures, and it's figures that will be headline figures from people picking up this when it goes through full council. Obviously, the regional average for the planning applications 18.9 weeks, more now at 28.6. I think in your report it's 11 weeks up. But seeing the major planning applications, Jared, regional average 59 weeks, we're sitting at 513 weeks. How can an average jump by 209 weeks in a 1 year period? I can't get my head around the maths and that, because it seems to be, maybe I'm doing it wrong, and if I am, it'll be egg in my face as a maths teacher, but how can you increase by 209 weeks on average over a period of 12 months, 52 weeks? Because that seems like a staggering figure. And in the report, obviously we're used to wee red faces on the planning report. And I know there's been a change in personnel and planning in terms of Assistant Director Jonathan McGilley coming in, so hopefully we can see these figures going down. But they're the figures that will be sort of headline figures when people read this report. And it's not significantly higher than the regional average of that. It's 10 times higher.
Councillor Byrne, I'll take that one away with me and check that the figures...
It could be a mistake,
so I got that clarified.
Brilliant, because if it is a mistake, I wouldn't like this media coming out that we've a 10 times the regional average, if that is a mistake. Cheers.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chair. I have 2 points, one on performance objective 2 and another on performance objective 4. On performance improvement objective 2, which is about the enterprise regeneration and tourism area, I'm just concerned that our management team in council appears to be one of the few that haven't met with the grid operator and haven't involved our planning team with the grid operator, which is quite worrisome, because almost alone of councils around Ireland, on the island of Ireland, we're the only council not to have the national grid present in our area. And the biggest obstacle to job creation in our area is the fact that companies of any size have to have diesel generators in them, Coquille Harbour, Hourglass Harbour, Warren Point Harbour. Any big employer across the district has to generate their own electricity. We've got a situation where our farmers, our fishing industry, can't put electricity onto the grid because there's no capacity. And there is no 33 kilovolt line running through our area. The grid stops in Ballinahinch and about five miles north of Newry. This is the biggest inhibitor. It's normal for council managements to meet the national grid, and it's normal to involve the planning service in rolling out the national grid in the area. We have a 60-acre empty industrial park in Downpatrick, primarily empty because there's no grid anywhere near it. We have a similar situation throughout the area. Now, I know we've discussed this before, but if we're serious about job creation, management needs to meet the national grid and needs to ensure that not only can companies have sufficient electricity to do their business, but also are able to export electricity onto the grid in the way you would expect with the transition to the new economy. So I just don't see that anywhere there, and I don't see anyone doing anything about it. That is my point on Objective 2. Can I move on to Objective 4?
Yes, go ahead.
In Objective 4, we're talking about sustainability, and they are all very, I can only say, underwhelming targets, which we aren't meeting. Now, 18 months ago, we put forward a proposal to suggest that management should have a target of between £5 and £10 million a year coming in from renewable energy. It was seconded by Una Hanlon, and we gave a deadline to management to do this. There's no shadow of a doubt that our rates base could be broadened in other councils around Ireland. Cork County Council is getting £19 million a year from renewable energy and rates alone. Fermanagh is now getting £7 million a year. We're getting £100,000 a year. That's clearly not good enough for a council that has the best resources in the north of Ireland outside of Donegal. We also have opportunities to save money through renewable energy. That was also mentioned in the motion we passed. And we have opportunities to use large amounts of waste land to generate our own electricity through our own wind farms in the way that West Suffolk Council showed us in their presentation to us 3 years ago. So, I suggest that we ought to have a target here between £5 to £10 million a year by copying what other councils are doing across the island of Ireland, and in particular in councils in England. So I think the targets here in performance measure 4 aren't even worth looking at in the context of what we ought to be talking about. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Councillor Sharvin.
Thanks, Chair. And mine's is in reference to planning as well, which probably is no surprise. It certainly is something that I'm getting a lot of inquiries about, given challenges around staff. But just while Councillor Enright was talking, I was looking in decision time over ERT, which I assume is the right place for any updates for planning to go to. But for the last 4 months, there's been nothing referred to that committee in relation to how planning is performing. And given, I would nearly say all the time, these reports highlight planning as an area of concern, could we put action for the director, assistant director over planning to come with an update of how they are planning to address the challenges that are within the planning department, be that the backlog, the level, staffing, just so that we as a council are ensured that there is a plan in place to address what's going on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Justine, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, just I take that back, those comments back to the relevant director and relevant assistant director, and see what we can do for the next ERT.
That's great, thank you. Councillor Hanlon.
Yeah, it's just to endorse Councillor Sharvin's points around Brannan. I'm sure he's as inundated as I am locally here and even via our constituency offices. There is a level of frustration there in terms of the impact it does have economically when planning applications are being stalled or not moving forward as quickly as everybody would like. You know, even speaking to one resident who, for example, just merely wanted an extension to her property, she had the builder secured, but because the planning application has been, well, not stalled, but it's not moving either, it means now that she's lost that builder, it's likely to be a significant space of time before she can get him again. And we all are aware of the cost of materials going up as well. So it is something that I do think needs a lot of focus. I do recognise that there has been, you know, in the background, there's maybe been more staff employed and stuff, but that doesn't translate out into the public when we're reading these reports. So I think it's a good idea from Councillor Sharvin that we do bring back, you know, updates to allow us as members to give assurances that the council's doing all it can. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Okay, Councillor Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. It was just to note that the other night on the strategic finance group, we were told that the number of plan applications that are being lodged has actually went down, and it was to try to get some understanding as to how the level of application has been down, but yet the time it takes to deal with them seems to be going up.
Thank you.
Chair, do you want me to come in on that? It's Connor here.
Oh, Connor, sorry, yes.
I'm just hiding in the background here. No, I think it's the volume, or sorry, the income from planning applications has been down. It's not necessarily the volume or the number of applications that we're receiving. So large commercial applications would generate a larger fee than a small extension or a small domestic application. So it's more the fees generated have been reduced, not necessarily the number of applications. So I hope that provides clarity.
Absolutely, yes, that's grand. Thanks very much, Connor.
Thank you, Connor. Okay, so we just need a proposer and seconder then for item number 8. Councillor Byrne has proposed and Councillor Hanlon has seconded. Thank you. So we'll move on to item number 9, impact of flooding on council estate.
Yes.
Josephine.
Thank you, Chair. I will just start with the first report and then I'll also hand over to Veronica. So the first is in relation to our own estate. This is just an update report. We will keep this sort of updated, but to provide assurance to members that inspections have been carried out on our own estate within the council. Our insurers have been informed because there has been damage to some buildings. This is a very initial report and will be kept updated over the next number of months. So it's just there for noting at this stage.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any questions on that report before I hand over to the comms?
Okay, so do you want to take the two together? Because there's sort of like Councillor Hanlon and then Councillor Sharvin. Okay. Or we can go with Councillor Sharvin, sorry, and then we'll take Councillor O'Hara in. Both for 9, yeah. So, Councillor Sharvin?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Thanks for the report. I suppose, reading the report, there is a rumour, I don't know, it's a factual rumour, that whenever the flooding did take place, the Dunglish Centre basement actually took water into the building and that there may have been some damage to the basement of Dunglish Centre. Obviously, the report alludes to that there's assessments being undertaken to see what damage there is, but I'm assuming at this time moment there is no significant damage because the Veg Centre is up and operating. if the assessment, do we have a timeline for when those assessments will come back, where potentially something may change and there is room for concern? And then obviously there's other properties that we are assessing. I don't know what we're going to do with Dunleith potentially, but there is other buildings that we need to consider, but that's my prime concern.
Thank you. Caelan, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Councillor Sharp, just to alleviate some of your concerns, we undertook an assessment of Down Leisure Centre because there was substantial water that had ingressed through flooding. The basement is below ground. During the assessment, there was hurling cracks that were found within the concrete, and it wasn't clear whether they were there or have started to appear as a result of the flooding, but we're going to monitor them over a six-month period. So there was slight water ingress from the cracking, of which the sump within the basement was able to deal with, basically once the water levels outside have subsided, but is nothing of concern or nothing of structural integrity. So superficial, if anything.
Just quickly come back on that, Chair. Obviously, whenever the Leisure Centre is being designed and constructed, is there any flaw, maybe not the right word, but is there concern that when we designed this, it wasn't designed properly or something wasn't taken consideration to avoid water getting in? I'm just thinking from previous committees where there's been challenges with contractors and designs where we're currently going through that process. Is there something like that that we need to consider as a council as well?
Chair, I'm happy to take that as well. As you know, I was actually a consultant at the time, so conned into council looking after this project. And there wasn't a problem with the initial design and the initial piling layout that the contractor highlighted as a contractor change. There was a risk of a global slip, basically something similar to what has been encountered with the Ballydugan retail complex, and as a result an engineering solution was designed and incorporated within that design where the building was actually risen 0.9 of a metre above the finished floor level that it was previously designed at, and substantial substructure works were undertaken as a result of that in terms of additional pilings and cabin beams to support that structure, and it was severely tested there a couple of weeks ago. So there's no concerns at the moment on that there, and it looks like in hindsight that those measures taken by yourselves, it would have been at the time as decision makers, for that change has worked and has protected the building.
Okay, Councillor Sharp, Councillor O'Hara.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about Leitrim Play Park, which is mentioned in the report, and just to mention that, you know, there is a history of an issue of flooding with the play park, and really we need DFI Rivers and the play strategy to work in combination with each other to alleviate the flooding issue in the play park and make sure that it's protected and future-proofed. It's already been raised through the play review that a suitable surface is needed, because it's a health and safety issue as the surface is eroded if the park is flooded. So Rivers have been doing some great work in Leitrim, but it needs to continue to focus now on the play park and ensure that it's fit for purpose for the future. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor O'Hare. We'll move on. Can you propose in second there, or do you want to take the two together?
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll move on to item then 9.1. I'll hand over to you, Veronica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this report is for noting for councillors. And before I actually talk through the report, I just would take the opportunity to provide some context to our communications activities during an emergency situation. The council's emergency comms plan, which is the next item on tonight's agenda and will be taken by our assistant director responsible for safety, health and emergency planning, descends from the Northern Ireland Emergency Preparedness Group Emergency Communications Plan, and was very long-winded. And that plan is approved by the Northern Ireland Executive Office, of which we were in receipt of in May 23, just a number of months ago. So both plans, both the emergency plan and the emergency communications plan, were tabled to come to tonight's committee meeting following consideration by the emergency management team on the 11th of September and senior management team on the 4th of October. That said, then, the overall approach is to, there's an agreed approach by the Northern Ireland Civil Contingency Framework for Emergency Communications, where all public sector bodies work in partnership for preparedness, response and recovery phases to emergencies. That collaborative effort by councils and all of the other members provides a unified approach to the emergency communications. And that said, then, you know, if I move on to the report, just to summarise the activities that we delivered during the Muirin Mornin Down flooding. And I say Muirin Mornin Down because we were dealing with issues from Jonesborough, Camlock, right through to Crossgar, the entire district. The multi-agency approach then is outlined in paragraph 1.3, and that obviously sets the context for how communications was led in the recent flooding. The communications is focused on ensuring that the right people have the right information at the right time. And the use of social media is paramount and is to be embraced during these situations. And there's further information provided in paragraph 2.1 around social media. And just to highlight that during an emergency situation, and we seem to be in coming out of one and going into another, but during the COVID crisis, the use of social media and digital news was actually accelerated at that time. As I said, you know, there's a multi-agency approach. So this flooding was led by DFI, and not only was for technical and physical responsibilities, but included communications. And as the council, we were there to support that communications from the initial response phase. From paragraph 2.3 onwards, then I detail Muirin Mornin Down District Council's communications activity. And just to highlight, during the first week of the emergency situation, then our digital insights show that the public messaging that we were pushing out had a reach of over 1.2 million people. And in terms of those who engaged on the public messaging, we had over 9,000 residents across the district and beyond who were engaged on that. As I say, there's a number of other communications that took place both internally and externally across the council, across a number of platforms, not only digital, but there were the traditional methods of communication as well. And I'll not take time to go through all that because the members have that report, but I'm happy to take any questions on any of the communications activity during those first 2 weeks.
That's great, Veronica. Thank you. Okay, so Councillor Hannan, you have a comment on 9.1.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Look, I really welcome this paper, and to look at the level of detail on it, I suppose gives a sense of the amount of work that has gone on behind the background within the council in terms to the response to this emergency that the district has faced into. I do think, like, it's an opportune time just to really think about our staff again and think about the response across all the directorates. So initially we've seen sustainability environment stepping up in terms of redeploying our refuge section and the sandbag handling. And then as it went on, we looked at the cleanup, and again, they were on the ground for hours and days. The yellow vis is very, very evident right across the anywhere that we're needed. Then we look at the response in terms of our ERT director and going and speaking with businesses and gleaning all the information that needed to go to the British government to let them know the severity of the financial impact, you know, of the flooding. And then we look at our environmental health staff who are still out on the ground and helping businesses get back up and running again. I don't really want to miss anybody out, but it's just suffice to say there's a lot of work going on. I would worry about the stress that they're under, because they know that there's a lot of staff taking on, you know, job roles that they wouldn't necessarily would be doing. And that is going to create a lot of pressure. But in general, there's just a lot of angst within our communities at the minute. But there's a lot of unknown. We're looking at financial unknowns. We're looking at job uncertainties. And, you know, really, that's affecting our staff too. So I just want to place on record our thanks, and that, you know, we do recognise that they're still in the thick of this, that it hasn't gone away. We're now into at nearly to the end of week three of it, and it doesn't seem to be letting up, because when something like this happens, there's a fallout. And there's a clean-up, and a clean-up as in physical, but then all the administrative stuff that has to be done as well. So, and I think just this demonstrates that, yes, communication is vital, but we were working on a very responsive, you know, time, and trying to, and as Veronica has alluded to, you know, we needed to make sure, the council had to make sure that everything was going out in a way that was going to be accurate, not creating any more fear, and making sure that people were getting the right information. I know from our perspective, we were getting the information via the party leaders groups, which was very helpful, and we were able to disseminate it out towards to our council colleagues. You know, and I think we all used our social media as much as we could to give as much information as we could, and we're continuing to do so as well, because there's still a lot of questions. There's still a lot of uncertainty. You know, like Downpatrick's just getting back up very well. They're a very resilient business community. But, you know, everybody just needs to be working together and providing each other with support. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hanlon. Councillor Bourne?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I have a follow-up question, but I'm going to leave it to item 10 because it comes under the management plan report, emergency management plan report. So, just on the communication support, obviously, when the situation was live. I mean, the communications from the council, and it's in there, highlighted with the asterisks that the council done all that is expected of them, went actually over and above. So I'd have absolutely no complaint about that. I think the public messaging during an emergency situation has to get out very, very quickly. And obviously by some of the surveys that we've done, social media is the place to get that information out very quickly. But going forward, residents like to get the updates on social media, but we have to try and tweak this policy to make sure in situations such as severe flooding, like we've seen over the last couple of weeks, that businesses are contacted immediately. And I don't know if that the way of doing that is best served through social media. Social media does serve a good purpose in this, and trying to keep the whole district updated, especially residents. But there has to be a procedure to inform businesses, probably directly through the chamber, directly through BID, that we have information that we can get straight to source, and that can be added into the policy in situations where businesses get the information straight away. Because we all have heard, you know, businesses saying that if they had had more notice, that they would have been better prepared or could have saved some stock. And we can say it more blue in the face that weather warnings and stuff was put out on social media. They've got to be directed or contacted directly. So if we can try and fit that into the policy going forward in our response in terms of communicating, to try and communicate with members of the business community directly through one or two reps, mainly the chamber or the BID. And that follows on to the second question that I have in the communication. DFIE have outlined their level of communication through the whole process, but they have a line in there that community resilience groups were contacted. Can I ask, maybe the council can answer this, and it's maybe something back for DFIE to answer if we can get the information. Who are the community resilience groups? Who did DFIE contact? Because they're saying prior to with the weather warnings, they contact directly community resilience groups. I don't know who they are, so if we can get that information. But just a reply back, and maybe updating the policy to try and get communications out to businesses not using social media. Thanks, Chair.
Councillor Byrne, I think the queries that you've raised will be raised when, you know, there's a review of the whole position, not just actually within council, but the multi-agency. That's something not just for the council, but for that review. So I think those will be picked up as part of that.
Yeah, that's no problem, Chair. Just to come back on that, can I just make a proposal to go forward to that review, that it proposed that we do have some means of directly contacting businesses and we don't just rely on social media. I know that that is, we've covered all that we need to do in terms of communicating, but if we can go over and above in future, I'd make that a proposal. But and also, Chair, Josephine, can you follow up at DFI to see who the resilience groups are that they contacted directly, because it'd be good for future knowledge.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. I see if your proposal, Councillor Enright, has seconded, but we'll go in order. Councillor Taylor.
Yep, thanks, Chair. Obviously, note the contents of the report and some of the figures there, obviously, in terms of the reach out to the community is very impressive, and certainly welcome that. But I suppose that it's like everything, you know, particularly when events like this take place, you always look at ways and means that you can do things, you know, slightly better or improve things. And I suppose that the query I had is not obviously everybody will follow our council Facebook page or our council Twitter page. And certainly whenever I was getting seeing stuff, I was certainly sharing it myself. But I suppose the question I have is in terms of the local media outlets across the district, are we distributing that information to them at the same time as it's been put onto our social media feeds? You know, because they obviously have reach in the areas of the community that maybe we don't necessarily have at times as well. I suppose just to interrogate that a wee bit more, are we, you know, disseminating that information to those media outlets at that point in time as well, so that they can share the information that we have? Other departments may be doing it as well, and that's something we'll obviously assess as part of this overall review. But is there something that we can do in that regard, or are we already doing that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I could just respond to that, Councillor Taylor. In terms of the lead agency, DFI are responsible for watercourses, flood alleviation schemes. They took the lead on issuing the comms, so we were in receipt of any communications that they would have sent out, and they would have gone to the editors. We would have seen the notes made to available to the editors. It wasn't our place then to send out the DFI comms because they've already sent that to a database. We took the lead from them in terms of how we would have communicated, and our obligations was to share the social media posts. But as you quite rightly say, you know, we will undertake a review, and it'll be a regional review. We will be feeding back, obviously, members' comments and comments from everyone who would be involved in that review. And there'll be recommendations then put forward along with the lessons learned that we then would obviously adapt our emergency communications plan. It is a live document, and it's pardon the pun, but it's a fluid document, and so it's constantly under review. After every emergency situation, no two situations will be the same, nor will it have the same requirements. So it's continually under review, and you're absolutely right. You know, any feedback that we get will be fed into the overall review, and we would look forward to the recommendations. Again, it has to be, you know, a multi-agency approach, and an agreement then to how we move forward working with those partners.
Okay.
Thank you, Veronica. Okay, so we'll move on to Councillor Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a quick comment there to thank the council staff and to thank the council's top team for the work that did actually go on, and we all knew that there was heavy rainfall that was supposed to come, but we didn't actually anticipate the level of flooding that there actually would be from it. And I think from if you go from that weekend throughout that whole week of the council's response, and that the communication, and that the group leader meetings that they did have, and look, even if you sent a text, or if you rung council staff at any stage, any day or night, that you were getting back that instant, you know, sort of live sort of information. And we're all aware that we're now sort of living in a new time of instant information and instant update, and that it is good that the council has this plan in place, and that there is that mechanism there for getting those constant or for those live updates out. And obviously, if there is anything which we can learn from this week, that's only good news, and it's positive news. But the feedback that I have been
am getting is that the council has done a good job with the updates that were put out online, and that really, that fast live response was sort of almost a comfort to some, that they weren't just waiting for the info, that they could see it there. And it's just a finish by saying that thank you.
Thank you, Ivan. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Just to take the opportunity to reassure members that the communications, emergency communications that were delivered, were not only delivered by social media. From paragraph 2.4, you'll see the additional communication performance, and we had 29 engagements with the media in terms of daily media, daily press media, and daily broadcast media. So we were very much engaged with TV and radio to get those up-to-date communications released to the public in a very fast-paced and changing situation. There were joint news statements sent to the press, and we would have used our own website as well to put information on. So it's not just social media. We used all of the channels of communication that we would be aware that there would be different the various demographics of the residents across our area. They might not all be in social media, but they'd be listening to the radio, they'd be watching the news, and DFI have obviously undertook a number of media interviews, and paragraph 2.5, they have provided their staff at a very early stage that they undertook 13 media interviews relating to the Newry Morning Down flooding. So it wasn't just social media, it was wider than that.
Okay, thank you, Veronica. I think everybody in agreement in the chamber this evening, like the work that was done behind the scenes to get that out. And I think I said just in our pre-meeting, you know, it wasn't an hour by hour situation, it was minutes. You know, it was minutes that devastation took over. So, I appreciate all the work that went on. So, thank you. So, sorry, Councillor Enright, you have a comment as well?
Right.
Oh, Councillor Riley, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I would like to thank the Council for the work that they've done. And as Runa's pointed out, you know, we were getting communications down through our party leaders. The big issue for us in Kilkenny was we're basically an island community with the mountains on one side and the sea on the other. And whenever you had two major roads blocked, it was created a really fearful situation for a lot of people. And there was a real hunger for information coming through to the local council. It's like, our phones never stopped, literally never stopped. And it was very, very difficult to get information from road service. And if I go back, I'm an old hand in the council, as you know, I've been doing it for a long time. But whenever we had the big snow, NI Water, when we had the big frost and water supplies were cut, they immediately issued a contact number solely for elected reps to be able to get in contact. And if that had been available from road service this time, it would have been of enormous help, not just for us to get an update, but to let them know where our problems were. Because DFI roads down our way are still finding things after all this time. But I certainly would like to thank the council for the work that they've done, and our MLA as well. She was brilliant down our way in getting and informing us what was going on and getting things done. But there is that yearn and that real desire for information, because in Kilkenny's case, all the ambulance couldn't get through, police couldn't get through, fire service. It was just a really scary situation for a lot of people. Most areas you can get a diversion of some sort, but not with us. But thanks very much indeed.
No problem. Thank you, Councillor Riley. And sorry, Councillor Henrett.
Yes, I did second the proposal earlier, but I won't echo the words that other councillors have already said about the great work that was done by council staff, particularly in the latter stages of the cleanup. There were two issues for me, though, that I think do need to be checked. And ultimately, I know there is going to be an independent investigation into how the whole thing was handled. Two things came to my attention. One was the unavailability of sandbags in areas prone to flooding throughout the district, not just in my area. There had been in previous flooding incidents an agreement with DFI that we would know where stocks of sandbags could be got, and this would be known in the communities affected by flooding. The second thing was that apparently it was DFI were aware that areas like, for instance, Downpatrick were going to be severely affected on the Friday. And certainly on the Saturday morning, businesses, for the most part, in Downpatrick were entirely unaware that they were expected to be flooded out and certainly didn't have access to the wherewithal and didn't know how to use sandbags. I mean, people weren't explained to them about the importance of using plastic sheeting on the back of sandbags to try and keep the flooding out. So there was a communications issue, certainly, with businesses. And there was a gap between Friday afternoon when DFI knew for sure that Downpatrick was going to be affected, for instance, and the actual flooding out of shops in Downpatrick. So there is an issue there, and it will need to be sorted out, but I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Was Councillor Burns' proposal, everybody's content enough? Councillor Burns, do you want to just repeat your proposal? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, obviously there's going to be a review, as Josephine said, into this policy, but to update in the communication side, that we directly contact a representative of the business community, whether it's through a chamber or a local bid, rather than just the relaying on social media before going out. So we have a way of directly contacting businesses in such instances. Now, if that can be factored into the discussions that you have for the update of the policy, it'd be great.
Josephine, do you want to come in there?
This will be picked up, you know, with the review. We can certainly look at this policy as we, you know, move into the next section, but this will be picked up by the review, and we've also got to look at, I suppose, the different roles and responsibilities and indeed the different crises that happen, because while it has just been a flood this time, you know, round, it may be something else. This plan, you know, covers all sorts of, situations. So it is something, certainly I get the information earlier on that you requested, but I think this is something that we need to look at with the other statutory agencies.
Well, Chair, can I ask then that we get a response back in a future SPNR on that? I understand that we have to look at it, you know, whenever this policy is up for change, or look at it with the other statutory agencies. But if we have such a reoccurrence and businesses said that if they had prior notice, or direct notice, they might have been able to save stock or businesses, premises, and we don't have a policy updated, and we still just put out our communications and social media, the media, the press, the print media, we will be slated, and rightfully so. So as councillors, we're asking that we directly contact the businesses. So whoever we need to talk to in the statutory agencies to get that done, that's what I'm asking, and that's what my proposal is. So yeah, I'm happy enough with that, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Hanlon, if you want to come in to make a quick comment.
Yeah, I'm just picking up on the proposal from Councillor Byrne. So is the suggestion that we contact everybody, or is it like a town committee or a chamber? Or just, I've no issue with it. I'm just wondering how it would actually pan out.
Yep, I can answer that, Chair, very briefly. DFI put in this is the communications report. DFI put into their communications report that in this situation they contact the resilience groups in the area. So they have direct contacts of people within an area depending on the issue. Our contact is broad media. What I'm asking is, depending on the issue, and we've got flooding, that we can directly contact people who may be affected. That's business groups. So we have a point of contact. I'm not saying contact everybody. Social media is definitely the best platform for getting information out there. But there are certain groups that would be directly contacted. And if you have an issue where businesses are going to be seriously affected, we should have one rep or one point in each of the areas to contact the businesses. Bids, chambers, I don't think it's too much to ask to get a direct line to them, as well as social media.
I could comment. So would it not be more prudent to have like a flood alert scheme as they have in other jurisdictions, and that would send a flood alert scheme to everybody? Because obviously we need to be cognizant that residents were affected by the flooding as well. And we don't have that scheme in place here. I know, like, speaking today with the Shadow Secretary of State, and he was letting us know that his constituency suffered very bad flooding in 2007, where 55,000 homes were flooded, which effectively kicked in, you know, flood emergency warnings. I think that might be a better way of doing it. Certainly, businesses absolutely need clarity if there's going to be issues, but I do think it needs to be wider, that it's going out to absolutely everybody, that they are, because we don't know. I mean, I know there was wee pockets of Downpatrick where maybe one house flooded, for example, or it was going up to the back of other people's houses, and, you know, they probably don't have a wider voice here in general, because the focus has been on businesses, and rightly so. And I know in Newcastle it was focused primarily on residential, and then in other areas we have infrastructure issues and roads closed and implications of that. So I think that the focus needs to be from the council that we have a flood alert scheme, personally speaking.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry for speaking again. I do sit on the Drainage and Flooding Council, representing Yering Moor and Down, and to the best of my knowledge, I don't think they have community resilience groups organised anywhere in our district. So that is an issue, picking up on what Councillor Byrne was saying. Also, I know from sitting on the Drainage and Flooding Council that the Rivers Agency know if there's going to be a flood in Downpatrick, they will know which areas of Downpatrick will be affected, and it's not the greatest proportion of the town, it's a small proportion of the town. The same thing is known in Newry, Ross Trevor, and in Newcastle. So they can almost, they can actually create an image, a model of what's going to happen based on the expected rainfall. So it is actually practical to contact groups most likely to be affected directly, and the way he was talking about, in particular businesses, because they're affected, are in town centres and in low-lying areas affected by rivers for the most, the greatest extent. But there's also the option, too, of creating community resiliation group resilient groups out of those communities themselves. If we don't have any, maybe let's have them appointed within our area. Now, I can't be 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure there are none of the groups that DFI said they contacted in our area, so they couldn't have contacted them in our area. Thank you.
Well, Justin's going to try to get that information on who DFI have contacted, so, you know, we can't make that assumption then. So Jason's going to try and get that, but she also wants to come in just with regards to the initial proposal that Pete had made.
Councillor Byrne, I was just wondering, if I get that information you've requested, this will be a report that's coming back again to the next SPNR, that we consider at that point when I've got a bit more information on what you've asked for. Something like the flood alert scheme, you know, will be another agency. I mean, one thing we could do is the council is, you know, considering writing, you know, if that's something. That's, we won't bring the flood alert scheme in ourselves. That's not part of our statutory duties. But I just think in the first instance, Councillor Byrne, if you're content, I'll get the information and I can bring that back to the next meeting.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Josephine, yes, I'm content with that, but just keep in mind the commentary from everybody tonight on this, and this, you know, and I agree with the point that Councillor Hannan made about the flood alert scheme, and if we can't bring it in here, but what can we do to try and mimic elements of it? So yes, I'm happy to, when we've got that information of who they contacted DFI, for us to have a broader discussion at the next meeting, but just keep in mind the commentary of where we're all coming from. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. Okay, so we'll move on to item number 10, is the Emergency Management Plan Report and Communications Plan Report. We'll hand over to Kevin.
Thank you, Chair.
Good evening, members. This paper is for noting, and this has been drafted in collaboration with my colleague and Head of Communications and Marketing. The Council's Emergency Plan and Emergency Communications Plan have been updated and agreed by Newry Morning Down EPIG Group on the 11th September and subsequently by SMT on the 4th of October prior to presenting to members tonight. We are currently in the midst of an emergency and this emergency plan has been activated. We will incorporate data and lessons learned with the planned emergency planning exercises exercise in the new year. Appendix 1 is updated to include the new JESSA principles, the new Northern Ireland Civil Contingencies Framework, the Northern Ireland Risk Register, and the Memorandum of Understanding with other councils we recently implemented, along with the Business Continuity Policy. This document also provides comprehensive templates, duties of key officers and elected members. In response to Councillor Byrne and Councillor Cadogan Enright on the previous point, Appendix 16 of this report provides key information around severe weather, including sandbites, the CEFA scheme, and the community resilience groups, of which there are four in our district. I would also like to take this opportunity to highlight to members of the upcoming Nilgith Civil Contingencies Emergency Planning Training for councillors being facilitated in Oxford Island on the 24th of November. Members are asked to note the Emergency Management Plan and the Emergency Communications Plan, their roles and responsibilities in relation to emergencies. Happy to take any questions, Chair.
Chair, it's more a comment than a question to Caelan. The plan is in front of us and we should all be familiar with it, but I'm going to use a phrase that Veronica used there, you know, right information at the right time. And Chair, I'd say throughout the flooding incident that we have experienced locally, you know, most political parties have worked together and communicated in parallel and communicating the right stuff at the right time. But Chair, under the Appendix 10, it clearly states the role of elected members. And, you know, we can obviously, as councillors, we are functioning and we are communicating what the Chief Executive and Council is informing us. And obviously MLAs don't have an assembly sitting, so they could be forgiven for some of the information that they do communicate, maybe not being substantiated information or them inaccurately communicating things. But they were also pulled into some of our council meetings where they were relayed information and they are accessible to social media. And there's two examples where a particular MLA has inaccurately communicated information during and post that has caused great concerns for businesses and local charities in who's trying to access the 7,500 that we are distributing out at the moment. So I think it would be really useful that, you know, Caelan's touched on the training. I don't know if MLAs can attend that, but maybe we could ask the question and see if they are able to attend, because we all should be singing from the same hymn sheet. You know, we should all be telling the same information at the same time to ensure people are correctly informed. I'm informed that a particular business went to the information session this week and they were in tears thinking they weren't eligible for money due to a post on social media. And, you know, what that did to their mental health, I would hate to imagine. So I would really emphasise the importance. If you're not sure of something, like I'm going to use Josephine as an example, I would ring Josephine, and I did during the flooding and got the information. So it's really important, not just as us as councillors, but all elected members, to have that information confirmed and then distributed out. Or if you're not sure, follow the guidance that the council is issuing. So I'm just really emphasising the importance that the appendix clearly states us as elected members have in providing the community leadership that we're being asked to do.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Sharvin. Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just a couple of points. see the training, the Nuga training in Oxford Island. First of all, I didn't realise there was a place called Oxford Island, in Craigavon. It's all in person. So 10:30 in person for counsellors is really, really difficult, given counsellors have daytime roles. So if we could have some even follow up, online training or something organised through the council, and not just say, well, it would take place with Nilga, and you had the opportunity to go to it, because a lot of us would love to go to it, but it's not suitable for us. So that's something we picked up at a future stage. I suppose the point that Councillor Shavern makes is an excellent point. If you were all through a crisis, trying to figure what is our role as emergent or as elected representatives, what's the role of everybody in the council? And one best way, and I've read through the whole document, it's really good for trying to understand, the chronology of things that take place and whose role is what, and it's all outlined in that document. But when you're going through a live situation, it's the best way to learn, and I do, reading that document, it absolutely reflects what our officers had done on the ground, and I think hats off to them for not only following the plan to a T, but going over and above. I have concerns when you're talking about, I think it's in page 8 of the plan. See, when you're talking about level 1, level 2, level 3, and obviously level 1 is council, level 3 is the UK government. When you have regional emergencies, the coordination is from the Northern Ireland Assembly. Is there, and I know this is a strategy that's coming down from government level, who coordinates there? You know, obviously we've had an assembly down 4.5 out of 6 years, so who picks up the responsibility there? Because there could be, to me, there seems to be a gap in that. I was going to ask, I put in a queue because I was going to ask a question in terms of when the emergency plan is activated, because it goes through 4 criteria. I think it's page, somewhere around page 20, where it talks about whether the definition of an emergency or major incident is met, or is it a preventative, reducing, control and mitigating. But you know what, I'm going to leave that question to, there's an independent investigation, and I think it's unfair to maybe go in to when this emergency plan was enacted right now tonight. So I'm just going to, I'll take that question back. So just on the level 2, who coordinates in that? And then the training for councillors that can't make it to Nilga.
Thanks, Mr. Byrne. There's a Northern Ireland Civil Contingencies forum, of which at regional level, all councils and council officers, emergency planning officers sit on. At a strategic level, we're quite lucky that, although she wouldn't say she's lucky, that Marie Ward is actually the chair at SOLAS level. So we have got good oversight. Joan McCaffrey is our lead, and we had a LIAC meeting quite early, which then soon turned to a tactical coordination group meeting, of which myself and Kelly McNiff and Geraldine O'Callaghan were ever present. They were every couple of hours, and that was with Rivers Agency, Roads, PSNI, Fire Service. So it was a collaborative approach, which was led and facilitated by the Northern Ireland Civil Contingencies Office. Hopefully that answers that question. And you didn't have a second question. It was more of a comment around the emergency plan being activated.
Yeah, and Chair, I was going to ask a question, but I'm taking it back because I don't think it's fair to go into when it was activated in terms of a preventative, or when the situation was defined in emergency. I think that's more left for the investigation side of things. Just the training.
I'll go back on the training and see if there's a possibility for that to be held outside of working hours, or even for it to be recorded and potentially issued out. But it is an in-person, and it's for the whole of Northern Ireland councils, and they were leading on it. So I'll take that action away and come back to you.
Great, thank you. Okay, Councillor Riley.
Thanks very much. Pete actually covered some of what I was going to say, but Chairman, there is quite serious expectations made on the part of councillors. And I was wondering, how will there be dry runs done on this in the future? I know we've just been through the trauma of the last event, but if you're going to be fully prepared, you do need to do dry runs and retain that proficiency.
and fine-tune the skills that you have developed over the past while. And there's also very simple, straightforward things like the Rivers Agency, when we had our emergency meeting with them, told us that if we identified areas within the council where they could place a container full of sandbags, they will do it. And I think we need to be on the ball with those things and identify those locations, because that was one of the big problems that we had. We could have saved more dwellings and businesses if we had had early access to sandbags. So just those points, Chairman. Or Leanne, sorry. Sure, one.
Thank you. I'm not taking offense. Okay, so everyone come in there.
Sorry.
Yeah. Just on that second point there's four designated sandbag containers that are owned and operated by DFI. We were able to utilise those in Bransford, Newcastle, whenever the flooding hit there. And they were then replenished by DFI during the crisis, if you like, that were redistributed to other places, other places in Newcastle. Your first point again there, sorry, I didn't know it. What was it? I beg your pardon, yeah. I think we were emergency planned out, but we actually had myself and my head of service had planned an emergency planning exercise on Monday of this week for the gas link. We had 40 or 50 school students that were going to be incorporated within the emergency. We called that off due to the severe weather warning. And there is another planned exercise. I can't tell you when, but in the new year, to put these into practice, basically. So, and that will be kept to a minimum of those who will have sight of that and know that.
You see the emergency level bags, you're talking about what's the first day of year
and you need to put on your mic.
You need to put your mic on, otherwise it'll not be picked up.
Sorry, I was just asking about the duffel bags with the emergency equipment, and they're meant to be distributed to every council in Northern Ireland. I was just wondering where ours are held.
But I get that off you again, don't worry about it.
So Appendix 16, again, the Emergency Support Centre, we have equipment, and they're listed in Newry Leisure Centre, Down Leisure Centre, and Coquille Leisure Centre. Battle Box, we have called it, it's a red bin that has all that equipment in it, and we were able to utilise it in Newcastle, which was quite helpful during the crisis. So,
okay, thank you. Is there a proposer and seconder then for item 10? Okay, Councillor Hanlon and seconded by Councillor Barney. Okay, and then I did need a proposer and seconder to go into closed session. Okay, so Councillor Hyle and Councillor O'Hare. Okay, so whilst in committee, the following items were agreed. Item 10.1, the Newry Mourne and Down District Council Emergency Communications Plan, September 2023, procedures. On the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Sharvin, it was agreed to note the Newry Mourne and Down District Council Emergency Communication Plan and procedures. Item 11, the Dublin-Belfast Economic Corridor Collaboration and Funding Agreement. On the proposal of Councillor Sharvin, seconded by Councillor Hoyle, it was agreed that Newry Mourne and Down District Council signed the DBEC Collaboration and Funding Agreement, accepting
Mary Morning Down District Council as the current lead council on behalf of the collaborating councils and universities under the terms and conditions as outlined in the agreement. Item 12, STA Fund System. On the approval of Councillor Howell, seconded by Councillor Byrne, it was agreed to approve the STA to SYCSO software to ensure continuity of financial systems. Costs is already included within the Councillor's revenue budget. Item 13, Newry City Park contract for funding. On the proposal of Councillor Enright, seconded by Councillor Byrne, it was agreed to approve the funding agreement as per Appendix 1 of the officer's report and the signing of the funding agreement between Newry Morning Down District Council and the Department for Economies in respect of the Newry City Park project. Sorry, the Department for Communities in respect of the Newry City Park project. Item 14, consolidatory payment. On the proposal of Councillor Riley, seconded by Councillor Lewis, it was agreed to note a consolidatory payment of £2,000. Item 15, Castlewellan Park update. On the proposal of Councillor Howell, seconded by Councillor Sharvin, it was agreed to appoint the preferred contractor to deliver the Castlewellan Heritage Landscape and Historic Demise Restoration Project and the approval for to include the required budget and Council Capital Programme to deliver the project to the agreed timescales. Item 16, the Dundrum Playing Field Change in Pavilion. On the proposal of Councillor Lewis, seconded by Councillor Howell, it was agreed to replace the change in pavilion at Dundrum Playing Field as per the costs outlined in Section 4.1 of the Officer's Report and to approve the business case as per Appendix 1 of the Officer's Report. Item 17, Sainfield Hockey Pitch Flood Lighting Upgrade. On the proposal of Councillor Kelly, seconded by Councillor Lewis, it was agreed to approve flood lighting upgrade works at Sainfield Hockey Pitch at a cost as outlined in Section 4.1 of the Officer's Report and to approve the business case as per Appendix 1 of the Officer's Report. Item 18, Pacific Delegated Function. On the proposal of Councillor Sharvin, seconded by Councillor Hanlon, it is agreed to defer the report to be represented at a future SPNR committee meeting. And item 19, Management Accounts. On the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Hanlon, it was agreed to note the Quarter 2 2023-24 Management Accounts and the Quarter 1 Treasury Management Update. So that's our meeting concluded for this evening. So thank you for everybody who attended, and safe home to those who are in the chamber. Thank you.